Welcome to Giving an Answer. I'm your host, Harold Felder, and this show is dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. And today the topic is going to be relativism. And I have a guest with me that's going to help with this topic. And my guest name is Sean Hayes, and let me tell you a little bit about Sean. Sean is actually a former radio talk show host. What show was that?
It was a show called Contending for the Faith out in California. I actually was the announcer for it, and I was the guest host as well. So.
All right. He's also a graduate student at Southern Evangelical Seminary. He teaches martial arts and possesses a fourth degree black belt. Tell us a little bit about your black belt martial arts.
Right. Well, I started martial arts when I was young, a style called Kajakimbo. That's what I'm a fourth degree black belt in. And I'm also a... what's called completion of the art in Blintuaca Eskrima, which is the Filipino stick fighting style.
I can't even pronounce that. Okay. Yeah. Right. Take your word for it.
And actually, at the end of the month, I'm actually receiving a certificate of achievement from the Black Belt Hall of Fame. So,
a Hall of Fame?
Yeah. Getting a Hall of Fame award at the end of this month.
All right. Yeah. All right, man. Well, okay. If this show don't go right, you know, don't hold it against me. Okay. Right. And you have a website, theinoculation.com. Tell us about your website.
You know, when people think of the word inoculation, they usually think of injecting into the body the very substance that they're trying to protect people from.
Right.
Right. So the inoculation, basically, it means from a medical standpoint, that's what most people think of. It also means to introduce an idea or implant into the mind for the purpose of studying and testing and treating. And so for the most part, I call it the inoculation because as apologists, what we do is we give a controlled dose to individuals for the purpose of strengthening them, the building of their immunity to the very thing that we're talking about.
What type of things do you plan on having on the site?
Well, you know, for the most part, a lot of apologetics, so defending the faith on issues of philosophy and ethics and theology. And I'm also going to have some of my martial arts stuff on there as well.
Okay.
Because, you know, actually martial arts, that's part of my ministry, you know.
How do martial arts and apologetics marry one another? How do they?
Well, it seems like they don't. But you know, for all my life, I always say to myself, you know, how can I use this? You know, as far as what I'm doing, and you know, I spent a lifetime learning how to defend my life, and so the way I link it is not only am I teaching others how to defend their life, but their faith as well, and so I'll be doing a article for the International Karate for Christ Association. And working in conjunction with other martial arts associations that are Christian and who already understand the idea and importance of defending your life and stressing to them as Christians that we also need to equip these young people to defend their faith.
I had no idea there were Christian martial arts societies.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you learn something new every day, but that's good.
Yeah, Chuck Norris actually is a Christian who hosts one of the biggest organizations that's out there right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's get to the topic. Sean, tell me, what is relativism?
Relativism is the assertion that all beliefs, opinions, and truth claims are relative to, actually are subjective and personal.
Well, how does that compare to the Bible?
Well, the biblical view of truth is that truth is absolute. It's binding on all people in all places at all times.
Okay, so we have relativism that says that truth is situational or whatever.
Truth is like a matter of taste.
Okay.
I like ice cream today and you know, so they relate truth to taste, basically.
Right.
They reduce it to just pretty much taste, where biblical truth is absolute.
Right.
It's binding all people in all places at all times.
So why does it matter which one of these views we hold?
Well, because what we believe dictates how we live, number one. And, you know, a good point of that is in college I took an ethics class. And the first point the teacher wrote on the board was all truth is personal. And I asked him, I said, you know, teach, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, what's true for you isn't true for me. That all truths are a matter of personal taste. And I said, huh. And based upon that premise, it was 96 kids in this class. And based upon that first premise that all truth is personal, that basically all truth is relative, And what's true for you isn't true for me, he set up a guideline. And by the end of that semester, abortion was okay, euthanasia was okay, adultery was okay, homosexuality was okay. And in fact, he had a list on how to have, how to know if you're having a healthy adulterous affair. And I thought, that's incredible. And I actually brought that home to my wife. She didn't go for it. Neither did I. But it was just funny, you know, to see that. But based upon that first premise, if he can get you to believe that all truth is personal, then he starts looking at the issues and the and ethical truths, and it reduced down to basically everything goes. In a world where everything is relative, everything goes. There's no laws that are binding. There's no nothing right, nothing wrong. Morality is just a matter of opinion.
You know. Why do you think your instructor and the society at large are so willing to accept relativism?
I think the biggest reason is people are sinful, and people want to do what they want to do. I think that you know, it's a lot easier to just live without, you know, we want to live in sin, and so I think that's one of the biggest reasons. People are selfish. They want to do what they want to do. And a lot of times they want to live a life without God. They want to live a life without moral standards.
Right.
And so, like someone said before, if you kill God, then you kill morality. Right. You ultimately will kill a society.
Now, I want to interject something here because, you know, I find it very interesting when people, you know, talk about being relativists, and you were talking about your professor, that we don't live as relativists. We don't live our lives as relativists. Right. I mean, for instance, the point that you made about your wife. When you have a spouse, your spouse expects truth from you.
Right.
When you go to the doctor, you expect truth from your doctor. When you buy medicine across the counter, you expect the label to be truthful. In everything that we do, I mean, your bank statement comes. I mean, you expect that to correspond to reality.
Right.
Now, in everything that we do in our lives, we expect truth. We live our lives, you know, based upon truth. You know, fathers and children, he expect them to tell the truth. And, you know, all of our relationship, we want truth. But only when it comes to things like religion and morality, all of a sudden, there's no absolute. All of a sudden now, you know, everything is relative when it's not relative in any other category. And I find that really interesting. And when you were talking about your professor, I heard a story one time about a professor who was I don't know where at, but he was teaching a course, so something like yours, and he basically said, well, you know, all truth is relative. You know, there are no absolute truths. You know, there are no absolute right or wrongs. And at the end of the semester, when it was time for the final exam, he gave the final exam, and the students decided to cheat. I mean, just bold, openly and cheat, you know, just, you know, look off one another paper, and the professor was like, what are you doing? And they were like, well, we're cheating. And he was like, but you can't do that, that's wrong. They were like, oh, what do you mean wrong? There is no wrong, there is no right, there are no absolutes. This is true for me. Right. You know, not for you. Then all of a sudden, the professor was an absolutist then. All of a sudden, he was no longer a relativist. You know, it's convenient to be a relativist, you know, when it suits your needs.
Right.
But we really don't live that way.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. And it's true that most people, they affirm with their lips, but it's actually, you can't live that way.
Right.
And nobody does.
Right.
You know, even my teacher, I hammered that same issue of all truth being personal throughout the whole class, and I wouldn't get away from that point. And like you brought up the kids that took the exam, at the end of the class, I did that very thing. I held up the papers and I said, teach, you know, on what basis are you gonna grade this paper? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, if what's true for you isn't necessarily true for me, you might not like my answers, but my answers are true for me.
Right.
And he just yelled, Sean, shut up. And all the kids threw their papers in there, and we were like, yeah, you know, it was fun. We had it.
Well, one of the main implications I see of this, of relativism, and this effect on our society, is that if there is no truth, then we cannot claim that Christianity is true. You know, we cannot say that we have the true religion if there is no such thing as truth. You know, if all religions are on the same playing field, then we can't. And we see this in our society. But if you claim that Christianity is true and it is the way, when Jesus says, I am the truth and the way, I mean, that is an absolute statement. Jesus even said, I am the truth. But when you tell people that, they will look at you like, you know, you are just so arrogant, you know, because you are upholding this standard that, you know, no one really, you know, wants to accept. you know, for reasons that you mentioned.
Right.
For reasons that we are sinful, we don't want anyone imposing no morality on us. So we want to live the way we want to, and you know, so we disregard that which we want to disregard.
Right.
So that's a very good point. Now, let's look at some of the objections, because there are definitely objections. Oh, before that though, there's this illustration that I read that I think is very interesting, and it's the parable of the elephant and the six blind men. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have.
Now, this is basically how people view religion. And it was a story of six blind men. You know, someone told them to go up to the elephant and identify what it is. And like one man, he grabbed the trunk and he thought it was a snake. Mm-hmm. Another man grabbed the tail and he thought it was a rope. Another grabbed the leg and he thought it was a tree trunk. And so the moral of that story is supposedly the fact that, well, they all had a piece of the truth.
Right.
You know, neither one of them had the truth. They just had a piece of the truth. So that's the way we're supposed to address religion. That's the way we're supposed to approach our beliefs about morals, is that, you know, we all have a piece of the truth. You know, Christianity has a piece of the truth. You know, Buddhism has a piece of the truth. Islam has a piece of the truth.
Right. Yeah.
But that same illustration, though, undercuts that.
Right. The only way the illustration even works is that there's somebody out there who objectively knows the truth.
Right.
That each of these individuals have touched something and viewed it the wrong way.
Right.
And so the only way it even holds for the teacher to even bring up the illustration is to say, see, none of them had the actual truth.
Right.
They all really touch these things. And so it's like, you know, the idea that truth is just an illusion, you know. Well, how do you, if all truth is an illusion, wouldn't you just call it truth?
Right.
Why would you call it an illusion unless you are impositing something out there that this doesn't correspond to?
Right.
You know, and so all truth corresponds to reality. You know?
And like an example of the elephant, we know it's an elephant.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point.
That's the only way the illustration works.
Right, right. Even though they're trying to say that, you know, no one has a real truth. No, there is a real truth. It's right. An elephant.
It's an elephant. So they're mistaken.
Exactly. Each one of them are mistaken.
Right. You know, you can believe what you want, but what you believe doesn't make it true. And so the person believing it's a snake, another one believing it's something else, doesn't make that true for them.
Right.
It's either true or it's not. And the case is they're blind and they're wrong.
Right. Now, I don't know. You know, that's sort of narrow-minded now.
Right.
You know, you're calling people wrong now. I don't know about you, Sean.
Yeah, I take that as a compliment.
Okay, all right.
All truth is narrow. All truth
exactly.
is narrow-minded.
2 + 2 = 4. It's not 5.
Never been 7, never been 8, never been 12.
Yep.
Never will be.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So let's look at some of the objections. It is our society that determines right from wrong.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today, and I was listening to something that somebody else had to say about that. If society is the standard, but how is the ultimate standard for what's right, for what's moral, then what a society declares right or moral is right and moral.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there was a time in America where slavery was okay, where slavery was right. Society said that this was okay, this was moral. And it's almost like people equate what's legal.
Right.
To what's right.
Right.
You know, and so there was a time when people said that slavery was okay. And I don't think there's anyone today that believes that slavery was okay. You know, so I don't think society is a measure for how we determine what's right and what's wrong. You know, another problem with the idea society determine what's right and what's wrong is that it can't improve. You know,
yeah.
Society can't improve on itself. You know, you can't actually say, bringing up the case of slavery, that today, the idea of slavery being wrong is an improvement on our culture. It might be, you might consider it a change,
right?
But you wouldn't be able to say it's better,
right?
You know, you wouldn't be able to grade. You wouldn't be able to say anything is better,
right?
Or worse, for that matter. You couldn't define the difference of value differently from, you know, like people say, from Hitler to Mother Teresa. You know, so you couldn't. You couldn't look at slavery and say this is an improvement in our society. You know, if it's true that society is the standard by how we're measuring things moral, then what that society says is moral is moral.
Right.
And actually, then you couldn't have people who are reformers,
exactly.
Moral reformers, because somebody like Martin Luther King, who might come along and say, hey, I think society is wrong, you know, who advocates for civil rights or fights on behalf of these kind of things, he would actually, the moment he opened his mouth to speak up against society, he would be acting immorally.
Right.
You know?
And you.
And then why would they call him immoral for acting that way anyway? Because there's nothing right
that's
now
a good
in the first
point.
Place.
Yes, that's a good point. You know. And I actually had the sort of the same conversation, a related conversation with an atheist when I worked at NASA. I worked at NASA for 8 years, and I was having this discussion with an atheist. And you know, and I asked him, did he think, you know, how does he think that we have morals? Does he think that morals are absolute? And he said, no, he believes that society makes morals. And so I asked him the question about that. And I asked him, well, when the United States legalized, when slavery was legal, then was it morally right? And he didn't have an answer because he saw that there was a problem with that.
Right.
I mean, and he didn't believe that because when we went to war in Iraq, I mean, he had signs up, you know, in his yard about, you know, bring our troops home. So he was definitely against the government and a lot of decisions that they made. But yes, he's saying that the government actually, you know, actually determines morality.
Right.
And then and I remember actually asking him when he said society determines morality. I said, well, what do you mean by society? Because first I had to determine what he meant. Mm. Because I said, well, you know, do you mean the government? Because society, you know, I have one society. I go to, you know, I go to a church, and that's I call that a society. I'm an African American, and I call that society. So, what society are you talking about? And that's when he, you know, he was talking about the government, and that's mm-hmm. where the conversation came up. So he was very inconsistent. He couldn't live out
right.
that worldview yeah. that the society is responsible because it's unlivable. There's no
right.
way, you know.
If you're a relativist, why even hold a sign up for anything?
Yeah.
You know, like most people say, you know, I'm a relativist. Like you said earlier, they're relativistic on certain issues. Not if I come in and steal their stereo.
Right.
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
But they're relativists when it comes to other issues. But if you really are consistent, why aren't you for something today and against it tomorrow? Or why
right.
be for or against it at all? Why don't you just keep your mouth closed if you're really a relativist? I mean, why argue for anything, good or bad?
Right.
See what I mean?
Because there's no such thing as good or bad.
Right. You know, I used to joke with my wife, like, you know, we'll be driving, she'll say, go left, go right, go left. You know, I don't want to go right, she wants to go left. And then she'll say, well, it doesn't matter. And I always just say, well, if it doesn't matter, why'd you even bring it up? If it really doesn't matter to you, then why get upset when I go right?
Right.
It does matter to you. You want me to really go left. And so if a person is opposed to a view, you know, on one hand, well, if you're truly consistent and you don't, there's nothing that you really value about what it is that you believe, why not the next day, why aren't you believing something else?
Right.
Why, you know, you can't praise or give fault or admit guilt in any way if you're truly consistent as a relativist, you know. And I just think that the even in my class, if there was, like I said, 96 classes of kids, big class, but even in there, if we were to actually live out or try to live out everything that teacher confirmed as being okay.
Mm-hmm.
And honorable, you know, I don't know why you would say it's honorable or okay or any of those things. Anyway, honorable as compared to what, if you're a relativist, you know?
Right.
But if you lived them out, it would do nothing but tear up and destroy society.
Right.
You know, if you look at the issues, abortion, homosexuality, euthanasia, if I took all those 96 people in that classroom, we shut the doors, you know, this was our society. And we lived out what we said we believed according to what the teacher practiced. Well, you wouldn't have law.
Right.
You wouldn't have order. You'd kill grandma on one end.
Right.
You'd abort your babies on the other.
Right.
And then in between, you would either advocate for same sex and homosexuality, which don't produce anything as it relates to children.
Right.
You know? And so as a society, you would just eventually just collapse. Like I heard somebody say as it relates to homosexuality, you know, if you told every man find a man and every woman find a woman, love each other faithfully till the days you die, you'd be extinct in a generation. But if you said every man find a woman, every woman find a man, love each other faithfully till the day you die, it produces nothing but healthy, happy generations
right.
to come, you know? And so just from a social standpoint and just from a logic standpoint, you couldn't consistently hold all of those ethical views that he wanted us to hold and survive as a society, you know, society would survive. The only way that society could even attempt to grow, if you really believed and lived out same-sex marriage, homosexuality, abortion on one end, which wouldn't happen if you are consistent on those other two, and euthanasia on the other end, the only way is to get either other people, either you're going to have to come together as man or woman, I don't care if it's in a hotel or in a test tube, you know, to you know, produce another generation, or you just collapse as a generation, or you're just going to have to convince others, you know, to come in. And they are after the minds. You know, you got people right in our churches, right in our schools, who are after the minds of me and your young people.
Right.
You know, I have three daughters, and that's, you know, that's something that you have to educate your kids about. Relativism doesn't produce anything beneficial. You know, and it's very inconsistent, and it's not livable. It's illogical.
Right.
And what's funny also is you brought up, you know, the whole thing about Hitler, and, you know, and I brought that up as well. When I confronted my teacher in that ethics class about Hitler, you know, mm-hmm. first we talked about, I said, well, you know, what's, you know, who's to say that I'm wrong if I decide that it's okay to, if you step on my shoe, that you ought to die? Well, you know, and then on the other end, I brought up Hitler, and I said, do you think Hitler was wrong? The class got silent. He sat there for a minute, and he thought about it, and he said, I think Hitler was a good man and a great leader.
He said that?
Yes, he did. And his reasoning was because Hitler followed his beliefs. He followed his moral belief, and because of that, he did what was right for him, and I don't really believe he believed it.
But
it was just
problem.
Amazing that to hold to what he said and to save face in front of 96 kids, that he would make a comment like that.
But here's the problem with that is that the fact that he's saying that Hitler was right,
exactly,
because he did what he wanted to do.
Right.
He's still making a moral judgment.
Right.
Because by calling him right and talking about the whole Hitler thing anyway is that. You know, the thing you touched on is that in the UN, that after Hitler and we found out about the genocide of the Jews and the whole World War II, is that when the world went to condemn the Nazis, their basic response was, well, what we did was not illegal in our country. We broke no laws in our country. The international community said, oh, but you did break laws that are higher than the government's laws. So if there is no objective, you know, moral standard, then how can we judge other nations? If the nations themselves are the end all and be all, then how can we say that when a nation practices in genocide, how can we say that they're wrong? We can't say that they're wrong.
Right.
You know, we can't say anything negative about it. But we do say that.
Right.
And the reason we say that because we know that there is a standard to which we are all held accountable
right.
to.
Show me a culture where torturing babies for fun.
Right.
Or, you know, poking kids in the eye just for the amusement of it is okay in any culture.
Right.
A lot of times what we confuse is, practices with truth. And so, like, you know, I heard, you know, some people will bring up the fact that in some cultures, like in Hinduism in India, they hold cows sacred for you know, certain reasons, believing in ancestors. And so I guess that's where the expression holy cow came from. But here, you know, we have Burger King, McDonald's, and everything else. You know, we tear burgers up.
Right.
And so it would appear that as societies, we have different values. And so that's one proof that's given. A lot of times as it relates you know, that. But it's not that case. You know, we both value human life. And so for that reason, we don't kill grandma over here and they don't kill grandma over there. So it's just in what you, the idea is that we still value, we have the same values. How those values are sometimes practiced differ from society to society.
Right, people look at the surface of things.
Right.
And they see a contradiction when there is really no contradiction at all. If you look at the fundamental principles that underlying those things, it's all consistent.
Right.
Okay, here's another one. Here's another objection. Morality is a product of evolution that ensures the survival of the race.
Morality is a product of evolution to ensure the survival of the race. I think the reason this objection even came around is for some of the reasons we brought up before, that it doesn't really, if you're going to have a moral standard, there has to be an objective standard by how you're measuring those things. And so, for example, if there's a moral law, there must be a moral law giver. And so I think in order to get around that, what people are doing is they're saying, well, evolution is the basis for morality, and it's in the idea that we should survive. So you shouldn't lie, you shouldn't cheat or steal. because it's counterproductive to the survival. But if there is no moral truth, why shouldn't I? Why does it matter? Why would I care about your survival?
Right. Why does
if really survival of the fittest makes sense, then I care about my survival, and I wouldn't hold it. And the other thing is, I think that if that's true, then to lie, steal, and cheat, it would be immoral not to lie, steal, and cheat in a society where survival of the fittest is the evolution is the means. I think if the survival is the basis for the ground for why our morals are there, I think it would be a moral thing for me to lie, cheat, and steal for my survival.
But here's another thing the problem that this poses. It assumes that the survival of the race is a good thing.
Exactly. Right.
But how can the survival of the race be a good thing if there is no such thing as good?
Right. Why would I even care?
Right.
Why should I not lie and cheat for the good or you know, for the good of society?
Right.
Why?
Right. Right.
There's no moral, you know, basis for it.
There are a number of self-defeating statements we hear people make all the time, and I want you to respond to them, because we hear this in our society all the time. That's true for you, but not for me.
Is that true for everybody? And that's the one that when the guy in our class brought up. He said, you know, that's your truth, you know. And what's true for you isn't true for me. And it's like, well, is that true for everybody or just for you?
Right.
Well, maybe that's not my truth. You see what I mean?
Right.
You know, it's funny. On the presidential debates, Kerry was asked a question about abortion. He answered that question about morality. He said, I don't believe it's okay to legislate my beliefs or articles of faith on somebody else, you know? And if you're a moral relativist, why not?
Right. Well, you know. Okay, we're running out of time. Just like 5 seconds for each one of these.
All right.
Who are you to judge?
Who are me to judge? Who are me not to judge? In fact, if you're a relativist, why are you judging me judging?
Right. You are narrow-minded.
All truth is narrow. We covered that earlier.
Right, right. You're intolerant.
That's implying that I should be tolerant. It's implying an ought. It's implying the moral idea that I ought to tolerate, you know.
There are no absolutes.
Same thing. You just turn it right back on themselves. Somebody said, you asked them, is that absolutely true? Yeah.
All truth is relative. We touched that. There is no truth.
Are you affirming that that's absolutely true, or is that just relative?
Well, we've covered that. We're out of time. Time flew by. So
it went by pretty quick.
Yeah. So thank you for joining me on the show. I want to thank again my guest, Sean Hayes. And tune in to the show next week. And until then, goodbye and God bless.